Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about death and taxes. Great subject we all love to talk about. Joining me today is Kathleen Gilbert. She is the owner and attorney of Gilbert Law Office. And Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA, that's Utah Association of Certified Public Accountants. And UACPA is the sponsor of Money Making Sense. Thank you so much to both of you for joining me.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. It's not the funnest topic, but it's a much needed topic.
It is. And we'll get into the taxes a little bit, but there's a whole lot more than just taxes involved when somebody passes or you're preparing for somebody to pass. And I have been going through this very recently as both of my parents passed away, my biological parents. But my stepfather, he just told me the other day that one of the bank accounts where they have my mother's retirement account, it's Wells Fargo, and they will not release the money to him, even though he has the death certificate and the will. And he's now having to get an attorney in order to get access to the money. So what should have happened before my mother passed that would have perhaps helped this situation?
Well, it's really important that you check to make sure every account you have has a beneficiary. And so it could be that your mother did not list him clearly as a beneficiary, and therefore they're going to have to do a probate in order to make sure that it goes to him. But everybody has cash accounts at various banks and financial institutions, and you want to make sure that there is a beneficiary listed for each of them. And for all your insurance policies, I had a client who was married to the same woman his entire life, died, and he had no beneficiary listed for his life insurance. And we had to get involved to help his wife, who needed that money, get that money.
Wow. So is just listing a beneficiary on, I'm going to go specifically to bank accounts, because there's a lot of different types of property that can be willed or given to somebody on when they pass. But is listing a beneficiary the only way for survivors to get access to someone's account?
There's payable on death, there's transferable on death, there's beneficiary. So whatever the financial institution has as the designation for who would be able to get access to it. But many times you have to probate it in order to get the monies if you haven't followed the contractual arrangements of the financial institution where the money is.
Oh, so that's what's important. You actually want to talk to somebody at that financial institution to find out what their procedures are. What if my stepfather had been a co-signee on the account? Would that have helped?
In an account other than retirement, because in retirement, it was her retirement. Oh. So he couldn't have been that. But in a joint account, or to have a lot of people put one of their children as a co-signee or co-signatory on a financial account. And then when someone passes away, they still are alive. And so they still can get access to that account.
Susan, what things have you run across when you've had clients who possibly a family member has died and they're supposed to get an inheritance, but it's taking longer than they expected?
Well, I think that you're right along this same vein. It's where accounts haven't been kept up. You know, I mean, I think we reach a certain point in life where we probably ought to be making sure that we have either joint accounts with somebody besides our spouse. We ought to be putting one of our kids or somebody else on there. But an even bigger problem, you know, when I was in public practice is the beneficiary issue. I mean, you just alluded to it on a life insurance policy. If we don't have those beneficiaries and if we aren't reviewing them, you know, every so often, I mean, Kathleen, you would certainly have a better judgment on this because you live in this world, but for me, every 4 to 5 years, I would sit down with my clients and their attorney and say, okay, let's go over everything and make sure that we have everyone in the spot that we want them, or if there are new information, you know, just keep everything updated.
Well, a lot of times I think people, they want to believe that they can go to someone who will take care of everything. But as far as changing all your beneficiaries, even the richest of the rich, they don't want to pay a lawyer to go to all their banks and all their brokerage accounts and make sure they're beneficiaries. And so it really is, I mean, even when you have your estate planning done, you need to make sure that the trust is a beneficiary or your spouse or your children are beneficiaries. And there are certain kinds of beneficiaries, like in the case of a, you mentioned, Heather, retirement. You don't want a trust to be the beneficiary of your retirement because it would trigger taxation on death. Whereas if you have a person listed, then under the SECURE Act, the inherited retirement account can be taken out over 10 years, and so that you can spread that out and it won't increase your taxes that 1 year.
Well, you just mentioned something that I do have a question on. Estate planning. Is having a will the same thing as an estate?
Well, a will is part of your estate planning. So, for example, a full estate plan usually is comprised of a will, a trust, powers of attorney, medical powers of attorney, or a advanced directive like we have in Utah. And then just the very strong reminder to check all of your beneficiaries so that those assets are going the way that you have planned.
What if you have people across lines? Because you just said in Utah, we have an advanced directive. But for me, like my parents lived in different states. How is that taken care of?
Well, there are different laws applicable to different states. And I would never, you know, tell anyone what to do in another state. But, you know, you can be informed enough to know this is what you need to look for and research and contact an attorney to find. And those are the elements that I mentioned, the will, the trust, a power of attorney, something for your medical directive if you were ever incapacitated or just unconscious and couldn't give directions to a doctor.
Susan, when we were talking about the retirement account, it didn't occur to me about not sending that money to a trust after you pass away because of taxes. Is that something that an accountant is aware of?
I would say so. I mean, CPAs, we practice in many different arenas, but as CPAs, if we're working with our clients, we're working with them and their estates. Yes, we know about that. And, you know, we typically do not suggest that a trust be a beneficiary. But there are times, you know, but that's why it's so important that we stay on top of it.
Yeah. And can a friend be a beneficiary, or does it have to be like a blood or an adopted relative?
Of what?
Oh, a friend. Okay, sorry. I make out my will and I have no kids, or I've disowned them because, you know, they're horrible. Can I make somebody who's not related to me a beneficiary?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there are different rules, like for different things, like state law may require that you can't make someone else the beneficiary of your retirement unless your spouse waives it. Or if you're doing a will or a trust, you can't make a exclude your whole family and make someone else unless you're very specific and use language, some magic words that say, you know, I am intentionally omitting these family members as beneficiaries, and I'm giving my entire estate to Frank, the neighbor.
This is a good place to take a break. When we come back, we'll go over some more things that you need to be aware of, either if you know coming up you're going to be the recipient of an estate, or you're planning your own. So things that are very important. And we'll be right back with Kathleen Gilbert. She is the owner and attorney of Gilbert Law Office, and Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show. If it affects your life in any way money-wise, we're talking about it. And today we're talking about death. And that does affect you money-wise, whether you're planning your own death for your funeral or maybe you're going to receive some money as a beneficiary. So with me today is Kathleen Gilbert. She is the owner and attorney of Gilbert Law Office, and Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA. Kathleen, as we tidied up that last segment, I hit on a little bit of what if you're the person who is creating your own will? If I'm the person making my will, I have to decide who I'm going to give it all to. But I could also be the person receiving money. So tell us a little bit about, I know there's beneficiary, I would be receiving the money. What's it called if I'm trying to give all of my assets away?
The person who gives their assets away, they're the grantor or the settlor or the trustor in the case of a trust.
Susan, you called it fiduciary. Who's that?
Well, the fiduciary, they're the person who will help take care of, let's say, the financial matters of a trust or kind of the trusted advisor. I mean, it's who you as the trustor would put in your trust to take care of the affairs of the trust.
Susan, I'm going to give all my money to you. I'm making out the will and I go, Susan, you've been so great to me. I want you to have everything that I own. Can I make you the fiduciary as well? Is that a conflict of interest?
Boy, I'm going to defer to Kathleen on that.
I wouldn't recommend it.
I'm with you there. I wouldn't recommend it. I agree.
Especially if you're cutting out. We talked in the last segment about omitting or cutting out people who would be the natural person to receive. Those are the people that can object. And if you've been put in charge and you're also the sole beneficiary, then that's going to be harder for you to look like you have a white hat on. And there are things called undue influence. It's a tough road to take in litigation, but you can allege that the person that received it exerted undue influence against the person who died and left it. And, you know, those are litigated all the time in this state.
So that is just some of the things to think about before you pass. Like, who do you trust to follow your wishes after you die? To get everything taken care of for your estate or just even the will.
Right. And as Susan said, that's called the fiduciary. And the fiduciary is, in the case of the will, it's the personal representative. That used to be called the executor. And in the case of the trust, that's the trustee. And so that's the person who is independent. They have a duty of loyalty, a duty to take care of the heirs and to not have a conflict of interest. Because frankly, in so many cases, the trustee is a family member and is also an heir. Because parents typically choose one or more of their children to be the trustee or co-trustees. And so they have an explicit conflict of interest, and they need to take care of that trust and protect all the beneficiaries above their own interest.
Things that people don't like to think about are how many death certificates should we order after a loved one has passed and you have to bury them. First of all, I don't think people know you have to pay for those. Each death certificate costs you money. It's not a huge amount, but they cost money. But how many death certificates would somebody need in order to take care of all of the assets that the person who died had?
Well, most morticians recommend 12. I would say between 7 and 10. And it depends on if you have real property and if you have how many you're going to use at the bank. But in most instances, you will get them back after you use them. Like if you file them with a deed transferring the property to someone, the county recorder will scan it and send you back the original. So you'll get it. But as I said, the likely number that you'll be recommended is probably 10 to 12.
And if each death certificate is $25 and you get 10, that's $250 that you need to pay up front. This is before you get any assets from your loved one. So these are things that people need to be aware of, I think, personally.
Well, and that's another reason that it's helpful. If you have a trust, then whoever is your successor trustee, as the successor trustee, can have access to your bank accounts. It can write the check for that $250 out of your money. So no one's having to get reimbursed and come up with money. But you're right, that's an amount that's just kind of one of the expenses that's part of an estate.
Yeah. And Susan, since you're the accountant in here, what type of tax happens the year after the person passes away, the IRS still wants any money that they may have accumulated before they died, that year before. How does that work?
So typically there will be one more return filed for that individual, you know, during the year. So let's say somebody passes away on April 1st. They've been receiving retirement, Social Security, wages, whatever. There will be one more return filed for that person. Okay, now post-death, any earnings that they make, let's say on investments, you know, real estate, whatever that looks like, typically that this, you know, all that goes into an estate or the trust or whatever, however things are set up for that individual. So they're not going to continue to pay taxes. But I will also say, and this is where we can really start getting into the weeds, investments, property, they get what's called a step up in basis. So, for example, let's say they had a home, they, you know, residence that they lived in. They paid $50,000 when they bought it in 1985. They pass away on April 1st. The home is worth $500,000. So that home gets what's called a step up. So at date of when they pass away, date of death, that home's value now becomes that $500,000. So if the kids or whoever's in charge of the estate decides to sell the home, if there's a gain on that home, it's only the gain on the difference of the $500,000 new basis, step up basis, and the sales proceeds.
So basically, if that step up didn't happen and the child sold the home for $525,000, they would have to pay the difference between $50,000 when it was purchased and the $525,000 in gains, in capital gains, versus if when the step up happens and they value the home at $500,000 and they sell it for $525,000, they only have to pay the taxes on the $25,000 difference for capital gains.
Right. And those taxes would come out of the estate before the monies are distributed to the heirs.
Yeah, because if you've got a few kids and they're all supposed to share in the proceeds of the home sale. That's a big difference.
Huge.
Huge difference. So is that something, Kathleen, that as an attorney, you can help people with, whether you're the person preparing the will for your client or the beneficiaries, you can help walk through some of these items?
Absolutely. And people come with questions like that, particularly people who have been diagnosed with a late stage cancer or something, and they're somewhat anxious to make sure that things go to their children. And it's useful for them to realize that if they have it flow through the estate documents, through the trust, that on their date of death, it will get that step up in basis, even though they can't like sign the deed to the daughter today, because then the daughter would be, you know, liable for, and the estate as well, for these capital gains taxes. But yes, these are the things that we look at. But I think that the most important thing in doing estate planning is what people want and who do they want their assets to go to, and making sure that what they want happens.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we'll go over some more questions that we may have and encounter. We'll be right back with Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA, and Kathleen Gilbert. She is the owner and the attorney at Gilbert Law Office. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today we are talking about death. And I know it sounds like a morbid conversation, but it has to be had. If you're not going to talk to your loved ones about what you want to do specifically after you pass, you definitely need to be talking to your attorney or to an accountant, because there's a lot of steps that need to be taken care of. And if you don't, the people left behind are going to have a struggle. So joining me today is Kathleen Gilbert. She is the owner and attorney at Gilbert Law Office, and Susan Spears, the CEO of Utah Association of CPAs. And Kathleen, one of the questions that we started asking was, you know, is the will the same thing as an estate? Which you explained a will is part of an estate, but they aren't the same thing. So tell us a little bit more about the difference, and does everybody need to have both?
So a will is a document that speaks at death. And it's not like a trust where it can go on a long time and hold monies and make distributions. And it pays your, it says to pay your taxes, your debt, to bury you. And it can establish guardianship for parents who have children under 18. And then in a lot of cases, lawyers have whatever's left pour over into a trust. And a trust is a document that's a contract that can go on and on. I mean, we all hear about trust babies that ski all the time, or trusts that are still in existence and these families are very wealthy. But a trust just basically will allow it to take a little longer to do whatever it is that are your wishes. And a lot of people wonder, why would I need a trust? And you would need a trust for sure if you have any kind of real property. And I think the way to think about that is to think about the county recorder's office, and you die and your children want to sell the house. And so they take the deed, transferring it to the buyer of your house to the county recorder. Well, the county recorder can't. The deed's not going to be signed by you because you're dead. So it has to go to probate unless there's a trust. And if there's a trust, then the successor trustee can sign the deed. And that's why most people who have real property have trusts, is that so they can make sure that the real properties are distributed without probate and it follows their wishes.
Ooh, okay. That is good to know. I think we're about to have a problem with my stepdad's house. Okay. How long does it take? Susan, I'm going to turn this to you. How long does it take to get the money if it's not a house and we're not dealing with like waiting for a buyer or whatever? If I have bank accounts and I'm hoping to be the beneficiary of, you know, retirement or, you know, checking account or something, how long does it take to get my money? Because I want it now.
That's the challenge. Everybody wants it right now. I'll give you the fun CPA answer, and that's, it depends. And it does. It depends on how well the trustors took care of their estate planning beforehand. I mean, if there's TODs or PODs or whatever on these accounts, then the transition can be fairly smooth with the death certificate. It might be able within a month, but honestly, there have been some stuff that I've done as a CPA or as a personal rep that has taken several months. And it just depends on how well things are prepared in advance so that we can go in and do what needs to be done as trustees or as personal representatives.
Yeah, in the case of my stepdad, who I think I mentioned earlier in the first segment, when my mother passed, there's the Wells Fargo account. It's either an annuity or a retirement, not sure. He's been unable to get access to it. What I didn't mention is the account originally was my mother's father's account. And after he passed, my mother put a bit more money into it. And I think she thought if they commingled his money with her money, that it would be easier to come out or whatever. But I don't know if they transferred that account from George to my mother, Laura, and now she's passed and Ted can't get it, my stepdad. So that's one reason, like if they thought about this account or done something before my mother passed, it may not require getting an attorney at this point so he can get the money out.
Well, that's what attorneys and accountants are paid for, right, Susan? We're paid to try to think of the worst case scenario and to try to help people prepare. And we talked at the beginning about getting beneficiaries, and I talked a minute ago how important it is to have a trust and a will, because that's part of your estate plan. It expresses your wishes, and it will also help avoid probate.
Wow. Okay. So the other thing is, what if I don't want an attorney? Are there things that I can do without having to spend money on the professionals?
Absolutely. We talked about making sure your beneficiaries are all listed so that every account by the contract with the bank has a beneficiary of who it will go to. I can give the example of my grandparents. They sold their house and the office property that they had before they moved into a retirement. And they put that into CDs. They had six children, so they opened six CDs, put equal amounts in each ones, put husband and wife and one child on each of the six accounts. So when they had both passed away, each of their children got a CD by contract. They didn't have to have a will for that. They didn't have to have a lawyer for that. And they transferred their wealth. The issue of frequent flyer miles, you can do that without a lawyer. You need a certificate of death. Well, on their social media accounts, I guess you can now call them remembering or in memory of, and then they will allow you to keep it up as a tribute to them instead of having to close it. You need to close people's email accounts. Anyway, you can handle burial without an attorney. You know, you can handle it's the person who has the personal representative is the person who is over the body of the person who is deceased. So if you had a will that listed your son or daughter to be your personal representative, then they can arrange for the burial or cremation and the funeral or gravesite or whatever it is that you wanted.
One thing to mention to anybody who may not know. Now, my parents did pre-buy their plot at a cemetery many years ago. So they paid, I don't know what it was, $3,000. And they thought that was that's all they needed. Well, when my stepdad notified the cemetery that, okay, you know, we're going to go burying, they required another $600 to prepare the ground, which the cemetery doesn't know when that person's going to pass away. So they're not just going to dig a hole and leave it there for 10 years or whatever. So you have to pay them again, even after you've paid for the plot.
Right, to open the vault or whatever it's technically called. There are a lot of added fees that come at the end. And I've seen a lot of people, the trend is toward cremation, planting a tree in their honor, things like that, because of all the costs but prepaying, that's another way that you can make it easy on your family, is prepay for the burial, decide where you want to be buried, and tell your family so that they're not left grieving you in death and trying to figure out where would they want to be buried. People communicate their wishes to their children, what they want. And then the other thing we didn't mention is personal property. These are the grandfather clocks and the wedding rings and the china and the heirloom things that you have in the sentimental things that you have. In Utah, you just need to write down on a piece of paper, describe the item, say to whom you wish it to go, and sign and date it. And that is how you distribute personal property. You do not need a lawyer. You do not need to call your lawyer when you change your mind. And just so that folks know, if once they pass away, if something on that list is gone and no one can find it, then it's moot. But don't do the little masking tape on the bottom of things, because I've heard plenty of stories of family members moving the tape.
Yes, that happened with my dad's parents, where they just had all the kids do the masking tape and they wrote their name on it. And my uncle came in. It was after my grandparents passed away. And he went in the day before all of us were coming together for the funeral services. And he took all the Limoges china. He absconded with it. And my aunt had been with her mom when they bought many of those. And she didn't want every single piece, but she just wanted the ones she remembered buying with her mom. And they're gone.
Everyone's got stories of those kind of, you know, while the family was at the funeral, these individuals went in and cleaned the house out or whatever. And or the personal representative allowed people to come in and take what they wanted.
Susan, any words from an accountant's perspective on monies? That's what you're concerned about, taxes. What do I need to gather together after my mom has passed? What do I need to bring to you to get that last tax return done?
Well, of course, you'll receive any like social security statements that if she was getting on social security, she'll get a final statement on that. Retirement, 1099 R's, any income, any brokerage statements if they had investments, did kind of the usual type tax stuff. But also be aware of, closing statements on the home, because there may be an estate tax return that we file interim for all the, before all the assets are distributed. So it's a matter of keeping all those records. And one thing that I used to always tell my clients is keep a list of all of your accounts somewhere in a safe place, of course, so that in the event something does happen, it's with the estate stuff, so that there's no question because, often in here in the state of Utah, often we'll go to unclaimed property to see if there's something, that hasn't been claimed over the years. Just precautionaries, we close out estates.
What about the medical bills? Because my mother had an ongoing illness and she was in and out of treatment centers every other day for transfusions and then had lengthy stays in the hospital from time to time when she crashed. So, what about those bills?
The hospitals will usually work with you. I mean, typically there's either Medicare, Medicaid, or some sort of health insurance. I'll be honest in saying I'm not sure what always happens in that arena. That's something that you need to work with your health care provider on.
But I was thinking as far as writing off on your taxes, can't you write off medical expenses?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, if they qualify to do standard itemized deductions, absolutely those would count.
Okay. Yeah. Just one of her medications was $900 a month.
Wow.
Just one of them. And she was on 37 different medications.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of nuts. That's another expense people have to, but you have to think about all of that ahead of time. For me, the point of this episode is you've got to think ahead, talk to, and like Kathleen said, you have to have these discussions with your family members. Even you don't want to, it's uncomfortable. Nobody wants to talk about it. But just because you talk about it doesn't mean you're hastening the event. It's just being prepared. I think, Susan, one time we had a conversation and you had said that more people plan for a longer time for a vacation than they do for their death.
Yeah, I have said that before, and I think it's to your point that it's not something fun to talk about. It's necessary, and I think that if we talk about it while we're younger and we feel like we're invincible, I think that some better planning can go into that, and then go into that review process every 4 or 5 years just to make sure things are updated or cleaned up. I think that it's easier younger than it is older
Yeah.
to discuss.
Well, in a lot of these things, you don't want to be doing the night before surgery. My mom was diagnosed with a cancer, and we were doing her estate planning and going over her powers of attorney the night before she was having surgery. And you just, that's not really the opportune time. And I know I've helped people sign their estates 2 or 3 days before they passed away. That's not, you don't want to be doing deathbed planning. But on the other hand, if you don't do your planning, we haven't really talked about, it will go according to Utah law. If you don't do a will, then it will go according to Utah law. And the tricky, it's called intestate succession. And the tricky thing about that is that if you have a second spouse, meaning it's not the parent of your children, then the second spouse is, and they're married to you at the time of your death, they get $75,000, and then the rest is split between the second spouse and the biological children. And that may or may not be what you want to happen.
Wow, yeah, especially if the kids are still minor children and they were products of the first marriage, and now you're married to a second person, and the kids wind up with the first spouse, but the second spouse gets the majority of the money. I can see that as a problem.
So, if you want to have happen what you want to have happen, then you should be thinking about estate planning.
Definitely. Okay, any last thoughts, Susan, on your end?
I think, Kathleen, you just summed it up perfectly. It's the time to start thinking about this is right now, if you want things to go the way you want them to go, rather than waiting till the last minute. And I think it is important to let your kids know what's going on too.
Yeah, like I said, I'm very grateful for the last year. My mother did start talking about her wishes. She still didn't do all the paperwork that would have been really, really nice, especially for my stepdad now. But at least we understood more about her wishes.
Well, you know, one of the primary reasons that I do estate planning is because it gives people such a sense of relief once it's signed. I mean, people really do feel better when their estate plan is in place. It's a happy kind of occasion. It's a happy kind of law to practice. And I think that people, once they get it all in place, they really will feel a sense of relief instead of this morbidity or something.
Nice. Okay. Thank you so much, Kathleen Gilbert. You are an attorney and you're the owner of Gilbert Law Office. And Susan Spears, the CEO of Utah Association of CPAs. UACPA is the sponsor of Money Making Sense. I'm always happy when Susan can join me and keep me in line sometimes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.